Have you ever felt that, you know, that relentless pull, that familiar current just trying to drag you back into old patterns, old unhelpful ways, even when you're really trying, like really trying to move forward?
Mm.
It's such a frustrating feeling. It's like you think you're doing everything right, but something deeper just keeps, I don't know, pulling you off course.
Yeah.
So today we're doing a deep dive into exactly that, understanding and crucially, learning how we might abandon those harmful cravings and compulsions that can feel just so incredibly sticky.
That's precisely what we're exploring today. And this deep dive, it's rooted in Chapter 25 of the RAFT to Freedom program.
Ah, yes, the RAFT program.
Yeah. And just as a reminder, RAFT, it's an acronym. Recognize, abandon, freedom, and train.
Right.
Our mission here really is to offer you some practical, maybe even profound insights into navigating these powerful internal currents, helping you understand not just why they pop up, but how you can genuinely, like, you know, loosen their grip and maybe chart a new course.
And the value for you listening in is potentially huge, isn't it? Because understanding these dynamics, the way the RAFT program lays them out, it feels like it offers a powerful shortcut, a way to find freedom from that dissatisfaction, those repetitive cycles that just feel so overwhelming sometimes.
Exactly. It's about getting beyond just managing the symptoms.
Yeah, getting to the core. So, okay, let's unpack this. When we first encounter cravings, that initial experience, it feels deeply personal, doesn't it? It's always my urges, my pain, my struggle. Like you're clinging onto your own little raft, just trying to stay afloat.
Oh, absolutely. That intensely personal feeling, it's a very natural starting point for so many people. But the RAFT to Freedom program, it introduces this really significant, almost liberating shift in perspective.
Okay.
It invites us really to move beyond seeing these cravings as inherently mine. As we kind of progress through the program, we start to recognize that actually a lot of what arises, you know, the grasping, the aversion, that deep confusion, they're often preconditioned patterns.
Huh.
Yeah, just patterns passing through the mind and body. A bit like the program says, weather through the open sky. They aren't fundamental to who we are. They don't truly belong to us in that fixed way.
Right, like clouds passing.
Exactly. And this is why the language in the RAFT program is so deliberate, so careful. Instead of talking about our craving, we learn to speak of craving arising,
mm-hmm.
or maybe habit energy stirring.
Habit energy stirring. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And that distinction, it's subtle but crucial because it creates space. Space for mindful awareness that's less tangled up with our personal identity or with blame. It helps us see these things more as, you know, universal human experiences. Impersonal transient visitors.
So, okay, if those familiar currents, those cravings, those compulsions, if they come back, it's not necessarily a failure on my part.
Fair at all.
It's just the nature of the flow of the water, as the program puts it.
Precisely.
Wow. That perspective alone feels like a game changer. It just instantly depersonalizes the whole thing, makes it feel less daunting, maybe. Like finding a brand new tool on your raft.
It really can be. It shifts the whole dynamic.
Okay, so now let's turn to the core of this deep dive, trying to pinpoint the source of amplified suffering. Because the journey in the RAFT program, it moves from recognizing life's difficulties, like surveying that dangerous shore, to this really crucial task of abandoning harmful cravings and compulsions.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as Chapter 25 explains, is the second key stage on the journey towards the far shore of liberation.
Precisely. And this directly addresses what Gautama, the Buddha, realized in his second profound insight.
Oh, Gautama.
His realization was that suffering doesn't just happen. It actually intensifies through craving. It's not just the unavoidable stuff life throws at us.
Very difficult circumstances.
Exactly. It's our reactive struggle with them, fueled by craving, that creates so much unnecessary and, importantly, avoidable suffering.
Avoidable suffering. That's key.
It is. And Gautama's teaching on craving was quite specific. He spoke of, and I'm quoting loosely here, the craving which leads to renewed existence, accompanied by delight and lust, seeking delight now here, now there.
Okay.
That is, craving for sensual pleasures, craving for existence, craving for non-existence.
Wow. So he's talking about something deeper than just, say, wanting a piece of cake. It's this often unconscious, demanding thirst, or a powerful clinging.
That's it, exactly.
That relentless, I need this, I must have that, or maybe the flip side, I can't stand this, get this away from me.
Yeah.
Energy.
Yes, that's the energy that fuels our dissatisfaction and drives all sorts of compulsive behaviors. And like you said, it's so pervasive, yet often operates just beneath our conscious awareness.
Right, under the surface.
Yeah, and this is where we draw that clear line between life's unavoidable difficulties and, as the RAFT program puts it, the vast amounts of unnecessary avoidable suffering that we generate through our struggle with craving and avoidance. Mm. The program uses that powerful metaphor. You mentioned the raft. Craving is described as like a powerful underlying current.
Okay.
It's constantly trying to pull our raft back towards that dangerous shore or maybe into destructive whirlpools. It's also what creates many of the leaks in our, you know, those compulsive actions. And it convinces us to load all this heavy cargo onto the raft, attachments, resentments, delusions, stuff that just weighs us down and makes the journey harder.
That's such a vivid image. The current, the leaks, the cargo. Okay, so with this clear picture of craving's power, did Gotama also identify different types of craving to help us pinpoint it in our own lives? Because this is where it gets really practical, I think.
Oh, absolutely. He wasn't vague at all. He pinpointed three primary forms, very distinct.
Okay, what were they?
The first one is craving for sensual pleasures. This is, well, pretty straightforward. It's the thirst for pleasant experiences through our six senses.
Six senses. So sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. What's the sixth?
The mind. Mental objects, like pleasant thoughts or fantasies. So it's about seeking stimulation, novelty, excitement through any of these channels. Certain behaviors, like substance use or other compulsive actions aimed at getting specific pleasant feelings, they directly fuel this kind of craving.
Got it. Seeking pleasant stuff. What's the second?
The second is craving for existence, or sometimes called becoming. This is a really deep-seated desire, a desire for continued existence, for identity, for status, recognition, maybe control.
So clinging to things, to how things are.
Exactly. That urge for things to be a certain way and to kind of stay that way permanently if possible. This can show up as, you know, relentless ambition or desperately clinging to our reputation, needing validation from others, or just a really strong resistance to any kind of change.
I see that.
It's that drive to get ahead sometimes, maybe at any cost. And our tendency to grip really tightly onto status, power, wealth, or even things the program calls acquisitions, like having the right friends or always needing the latest gadget.
Right, those modern acquisitions.
Yeah, and this craving, it fuels so many compulsive patterns around work, power dynamics, relationships, certainly social media, even perfectionism.
Okay, that's a big one. What's the third type?
Finally, there's craving for non-existence, or sometimes called annihilation. This is the flip side, really. It's the urge to escape discomfort, to erase difficult feelings, or just numb out pain. It's aversion.
Pushing things away.
Yes, the pushing away, the wishing for oblivion, for it all to just stop. This form of craving strongly drives things like using substances for escape or self-medication, seeking oblivion through alcohol, maybe, or the warm embrace, as some describe it, of narcotics. Mm-hmm. But it can also manifest as other avoidance patterns, like isolating yourself completely. And importantly, at its most extreme, this craving for non-existence can manifest as a desire to end life.
That's serious.
It is. And it's vital to remember, if thoughts like that arise for anyone listening, please immediately seek professional help. There is support available.
Absolutely crucial. Okay, so understanding these three distinct forms, sensual pleasure, existence, non-existence, it gives you a much clearer lens, doesn't it? Right. To see the underlying causes of those harmful patterns you might be caught in.
It really does.
And that clarity, oh, that feels incredibly empowering. It gives you the knowledge to start moving strategically towards freedom.
And what's fascinating is how Gotama's insights, you know, from over 2,500 years ago connect so well with modern evolutionary psychology.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, many of our compulsive behaviors actually seem to stem from ancient hardwired drives, drives to survive and procreate. The RAFT program highlights three sort of ancient primary compulsions that resonate powerfully here. The compulsion to protect, the compulsion to promote, and the compulsion to satisfy.
Protect, promote, satisfy. Okay.
And these map almost perfectly onto Gotama's three cravings. The compulsion to protect, that aligns directly with the craving for existence. It's our deep drive for physical safety, certainty, control. In modern life, this can translate into building, you know, castles and fortresses of beliefs or routines to try and fend off anxiety about an uncertain world.
By trying to make everything feel safe.
Exactly. Then the compulsion to promote. That's another aspect of craving for existence, our drive for status, recognition, validation, making sure we have a good place in the social hierarchy, the tribe. It's a natural, often unconscious force behind our preoccupation with self-image and social connection.
Okay. Protecting ourselves, promoting ourselves.
Yeah.
What about satisfying?
And to satisfy, well, that covers both the craving for sensual pleasures and the craving for non-existence. It's rooted in our ancient need to regulate our body-mind system, seeking fleeting pleasure, or just as often, trying desperately to escape discomfort and pain.
Wow, that connection is so illuminating. Protect, promote, satisfy. It makes so much sense when you frame it that way. It's almost like our evolutionary wiring gets hijacked, baby.
In a way, yes. These ancient drives, useful for survival on the savannah, can become drivers of unhelpful patterns in our complex modern world.
And it reminds me, actually, of the story of the young Gotama himself. The RAFT program talks about his incredibly lavish early life.
Oh, yes.
Wearing the finest clothes, having three houses. Apparently, he never even left the palace complex for 4 whole months during the rainy season. He had, as the text says, many pleasures and acquisitions.
Quite the list.
Yeah. Spouses and children, male and female slaves, goats and sheep, fowl and pigs, elephants, cattle, horses and mares, and gold and silver. I mean, he literally had it all.
He really did. The pinnacle of worldly success at the time.
But then he became profoundly disillusioned with it all.
Mm.
With that lifestyle and the constant pressure and responsibility to maintain it. And after he left home, quite literally abandoned all those acquisitions and obligations, he eventually woke up. He understood life as it truly is and saw how suffering gets amplified by these very types of craving.
Mm-hmm.
Such a powerful personal story that just reinforces these principles, isn't it?
It absolutely is. His own journey gave him these profound insights into how universal this craving for safety and certainty really is. And he distilled these insights into what he called his four summaries.
The four summaries.
Yes. We can paraphrase them kind of like this. First, the world is unstable and I can be swept away at any moment.
Oof. Yeah.
Second, the world has no shelter and no protector, no savior.
Heavy stuff.
Third, the world has no one. It doesn't matter how many acquisitions I gather, I must leave everything behind.
Mm.
And fourth, the world is lacking, wanting, insatiable, making me the slave of craving.
Wow. Those are stark. What stands out to you about those summaries?
For me, hearing them like that, it really helps to see this struggle as a kind of shared human inheritance. It makes it feel less like my personal failing, you know?
Exactly that. It depersonalizes it. It helps us see it's not just me struggling with this. It's part of the human condition rooted in these deep drivers.
It brings to mind that quote from the American psychologist Rick Hansen. He said something like, Mother Nature doesn't care if we suffer. She only cares about grandchildren.
Huh. Yes, that captures it quite bluntly, doesn't it? It highlights the evolutionary drive behind so much of this.
It really does. Okay, so we have this profound understanding of craving, its types, its roots. How do we actually put this into practice? The RAFT program talks about abandoning harmful cravings by learning to let reactivity be. What does that mean, practically speaking? Well, reactivity, that's often our automatic, almost instant response when a craving hits, right? We just react. The practice here isn't about fighting that initial reaction head on. It's more subtle. It's about choosing not to feed this reactivity, but to let it be and let it go.
Don't feed it. Okay.
Yeah. By not feeding it, you create this crucial gap, a space between the stimulus, the craving arising, and your usual automatic response. And in that gap, that's where wiser choices become possible.
A gap for choice.
Exactly. And this whole process, it's greatly supported by what the RAFT program calls the five defenders of liberation. Things like confidence, courageous effort, mindfulness, strengths we build over time, which we'll definitely explore in future deep dives.
Okay, looking forward to that. But for now, what are some specific actionable methods the RAFT program offers to practice this letting reactivity be?
It offers several pathways. One powerful one involves inner awareness and acceptance.
Inner awareness.
Yeah. So this might involve things like keeping a craving inventory, maybe reflecting daily, or whenever a strong urge comes up, what were the triggers? What seemed to fuel the urge? Was it boredom, stress, needing comfort? And then trying to categorize it, maybe using Gotama's three forms we discussed.
Uh-huh. Identifying the type.
Yes. And alongside that, practicing mindful observation of the craving itself. So pausing when it arises, noticing the physical sensations in the body, gently naming the experience, maybe just wanting or pulling or urge, and just watching it. watching it arise, noticing how it changes, maybe intensifies, maybe fades.
Just watching it without acting.
Just watching. This really helps you see its impermanent nature firsthand. It diminishes its power over you when you see it just as a changing sensation, not a command you must obey.
Okay, that sounds powerful. What's another pathway?
Another key pathway centers on mindful action and wholesome alternative.
Mindful action.
This involves cultivating acceptance and equanimity towards the craving. So meeting it without trying to suppress it forcefully and without just giving in and indulging it, it's finding that middle way.
Not fighting, not feeding.
Exactly. Instead of fighting, maybe you just breathe with it. You could visualize the urge, like passing weather, like we talked about earlier. Remind yourself gently, this too shall pass.
Mm.
This kind of balanced presence weakens the craving's hold and builds your inner resilience.
Mm-hmm.
And crucially, this pathway also involves actively replacing the unhelpful patterns with wholesome alternatives. So engaging in healthy behaviors that perhaps meet the same underlying need but without causing harm. Things like meditation, journaling, exercise, creative pursuits, connecting with someone.
Ah, so finding healthier ways to, say, soothe or stimulate yourself.
Precisely. This is the practical application of what the program calls the resolve to abandon the unwholesome habits and the resolve to cultivate wholesome ones in their place.
Resolve to abandon, resolve to cultivate.
Got it. And just to add to those excellent methods from the RAFT program, it also draws on some additional Buddhist-inspired practices that can really deepen this capacity.
Oh, like what?
Well, one is the contemplation of impermanence and unsatisfactoriness. Regularly reminding ourselves that all cravings pass and that giving in to them in the past never actually brought lasting happiness, that can really weaken their appeal.
Remembering the outcome.
Yes. Another beautiful one is practicing loving kindness for the urge itself.
Loving kindness for the craving. That sounds counterintuitive.
It can feel that way at first, but it's about befriending the experience, acknowledging the part of ourselves that is hurting or seeking relief, and approaching it with compassion rather than harsh judgment or self-criticism. Yeah. It softens the inner struggle. This is actually a key response for this stage of the journey on the raft.
Befriending the urge. Wow. Okay, yeah. So what does this all really mean for you, the listener?
It seems to be about this shift, right? Shifting from being kind of controlled by impulses.
Mm-hmm. To consciously choosing actions that align with your deeper desire for freedom. It's about training ourselves, step by step, methodically, to let that reactivity be and to truly abandon these harmful cravings and compulsions.
That's it, exactly. It's a training.
And for those listening who like to, you know, dig a little deeper into the why behind all this, it's amazing how these ancient insights seem to resonate so strongly with modern science and philosophy. Is there evidence that supports these ideas?
Oh, absolutely. Modern research offers some really fascinating correlations. From a neuroscience perspective, for instance, we now know how craving can literally hijack the brain's reward pathways.
The dopamine system.
Exactly. Reinforcing compulsive behaviors through dopamine release. But the good news is practices like mindfulness actually seem to help rewire some of these neural connections. They can strengthen areas like the prefrontal cortex, which is key for wise decision making and impulse control, and reduce reactivity in other areas. It can even help lower stress hormones like cortisol, which often magnify craving.
So we can actually change our brains.
The potential is there, yes. Neuroplasticity. And then in psychology, modern approaches really echo these themes. Learning theory shows how cravings get linked to triggers. Cognitive theories highlight the distorted thoughts that fuel urges. And therapies like ACT acceptance and commitment therapy are all about changing our relationship to these difficult inner experiences, learning to observe them without getting swept away.
Right, accepting their presence without obeying them.
Precisely. And psychology also recognizes that often unresolved emotional pain lies beneath many of these unhelpful patterns. So developing emotional literacy, self-compassion, that helps weaken the cycle of using behaviors just for temporary relief.
Mm-hmm. And philosophically?
Well, from a philosophical standpoint, Gautama's insights align incredibly well with traditions like Stoicism, which also emphasize recognizing and restraining harmful desires for the sake of inner peace and virtue. There's also that inherent paradox of craving. Chasing things that can't ultimately satisfy just leads to more suffering.
The chase itself becomes the problem.
In many ways, yes. And the Buddhist view of non-self is also deeply relevant here, encouraging us to let go of rigidly identifying with our cravings. Seeing them as passing events, not the core of me, truly opens up a pathway to freedom.
So bringing this deep dive towards a close, understanding and crucially abandoning harmful cravings and compulsions, This feels absolutely fundamental to liberation, doesn't it?
It really is.
It's about recognizing Gotama's second big realization that suffering intensifies through craving and using that profound insight to address the root cause of our dissatisfaction and suffering, not just plastering over the symptoms.
Exactly. Moving from just battling ourselves to approaching our inner world with, well, with wisdom and skill.
Yeah, wisdom and skill.
And this crucial step of abandonment, it's guided by what the RAFT program calls the four resolves, which boil down to our commitment, our intention to let go of the unwholesome and cultivate the wholesome. It really is all about mindful awareness and wise choice, which is what ultimately leads to lasting freedom from those destructive cycles.
Mindful awareness and wise choice.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And before we finish, for you, our listener, we have some really fantastic news. The RAFT to Freedom Workbook, which underpins these deep dives written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen. Well, they're making the entire 67 chapters freely available online.
That's right. It's an incredible resource, and you can find it at raft2freedom.org. That's R-A-F-T, the number 2freedom.org.
raft2freedom.org.
Amazing. So as you carry these insights forward from today's deep dive, perhaps consider this reflection question. The last time you felt a really strong craving, could you sense if that urge felt connected to a deeper need? Maybe a need to protect, to seek safety or certainty, or perhaps to promote, to feel important, seen, validated? Or was it more about trying to satisfy, to find pleasure, or maybe escape from pain?
Mm-hmm. Just noticing that connection can be very revealing. And we'll leave you with this profound thought from the end of the chapter. It's from Thich Nhat Hanh. Letting go gives us freedom, and freedom is the only condition for happiness. Letting go gives us freedom. Powerful. And perhaps one final thought to mull over from Jon Kabat-Zinn. You can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf.